Let's turn to Genesis chapter 30 as we continue through Genesis tonight. As we finish Genesis chapter 29, we find that Jacob has become the father of four sons through one of his two wives by the name of Leah. And she gives birth to Reuben and Simeon and Levi and Judah. And ultimately, this man is going to end up with 12 sons. His name is going to be changed from Jacob to Israel. And each one of these sons will become the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel. And the remaining sons that are going to be born all the way on through Joseph are recorded in the verses we come to now. Benjamin, his birth is recorded in subsequent chapters. So we pick it up in chapter 30, verse 1. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister. Envy is a work of the flesh. And there's a lot of different types of names we can give to envy, that we can give to jealousy. But it's of the flesh. And it, yet today, splits asunder many, many families. And of course, God doesn't give us any place for polygamy today, the marrying of two wives or the having of two husbands. And he has two wives, which is trouble to begin with. Nothing wrong with wives, but that's just trouble, period. And so here she is, envious of her sister because her sister is having children and she is not having children. Let me say this about envy. Especially if you are dominated by envy in a marriage relationship or in a family relationship. The solution to that envy will not be found in necessarily your partner changing. Though if they are less discreet than they ought to be, that can be helpful. The problem is a problem of trust. And that issue must be dealt with between an individual and God. And that's who she's going to be directed back to by her husband in terms of getting it solved. Envy is a terrible, terrible divider in relationships. And so she says, as she sees her sister giving birth to these four sons, she has no children, she's barren, and she says to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" And I think that this is very interesting instruction in terms of the marriage relationship also. I think it's a wise word to wives. Something you should know about men. And that is, men have been called by God to nourish and cherish their wives. And when they do that, and they do that as best as they are able at that point in their life, they give themselves fully to trying to supply and provide for and make happy their wife. If their wife is then yet dissatisfied and asks the impossible of him, then at best you will make him mad, and at worst you will distance him very greatly. And Jacob here is very upset because what is being asked of him only God can provide. And occasionally, not so often, but occasionally wives will ask the impossible of their husbands. And the wife who is always just one thing away from being satisfied. And then once that's supplied, she's yet another thing away from being satisfied. Ad infinitum, ad nauseam. It is very frustrating for a husband because, again, there is something that he feels about himself personally in terms of how he's doing with God and his obedience to God and how he's just doing, period, in terms of what the response of his wife to his best efforts. Now, if he's a sluggard, that's an entirely different issue. But here is a man who is having the impossible asked of him, and it frustrates him a great deal. And what he does is he points her back to God. And that's good for women to know. It's good for men to know, too. Ladies, There are some things that your husband is never going to be able to provide for you. There are some things in terms of the providing of children, the providing of some levels of encouragement and help and these kinds of things that are going to come from them, but sometimes what you're asking for can come only from God, can only come from God. Sometimes we like to think that they'll come from this man, and if he was doing his job, he'd provide all of these things. He's not God. You already know that. So why do you struggle with it in terms of the demands? And so he's not God. And this is an impossible thing that's being asked of him, and he points her back to God. Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? And so she said, here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees that I also may have children by her. Now this is an interesting methodology. And then she gave him Bilhah, her wife, her maid, as wife, and Jacob went into her. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God has judged my case. Oh, has he really? I think that he graciously, overwhelms it with himself. But I'm not so sure. In fact, I'm quite sure this was not part of his plan. This comes out a little more fully later. God has judged my case, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son, and therefore she called his name Dan, which means judge or justice. All right, now some justice is finally being done around this household. Oh, it would have been a fun household, I'm telling you. And it gets worse. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I've prevailed. And so she called his name Naphtali, which means my wrestling, as she's wrestling now through this means with her sister. And when Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as wife. Yes, I'm flabbergasted. And I've read this a million times and I'm flabbergasted. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. And Leah said, a troop comes. Yeah, we're going to have a bundle here. And so she called his name Gad, which means troop. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. And then Leah said, I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. And so she called his name Asher, which means happy. Now Reuben, who is the oldest son, probably about 7 years of age at this point in time, went in the days of the wheat harvest, and he found mandrakes in the field. And the mandrakes were an orange-colored berry that were considered in that day to be something that would increase the fertility of women. Well, you can imagine how attractive this would be in this household. And so he finds the mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. And then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. And Leah said to her, is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you take away my wife's mandrakes also? A little testy there, I'd say. Ooh. And when Jacob... Let me stop there. Verse 15. And she said to her, is it a small matter that you take? Okay, my man. And Rachel said, therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. And then Jacob came out of the field after a hard day's work in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in to me, for I have surely hired you. Well, I don't like that terminology, but you have hired you with my son's mandrakes. And so he lay with her that night, and God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God has given me my hire because I have given my maid to my husband. And so she called his name Issachar, which means hired. And then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. And so she called his name Zebulun, which means dwelling. And afterwards she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. And Dinah will come in to play in chapter 34 when we get to that. And then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach, because to be childless in that day was considered to be a reproach by God. And so she called his name Joseph, which means an adding, and said, the Lord shall add to me another son, hopeful for another son. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away now that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Now, remember that Jacob is, his name means heel catcher. It means supplanter. Loosely paraphrased, it means con man. It means swindler, manipulator, the guy that always gets his way, whatever it takes to get it accomplished. He's an enormously talented individual. And Laban is the guy that God has chosen to bring into Jacob's life, who is just like Jacob, in order that he might remove from Jacob those characteristics. And so here these two manipulators come together. And Laban is going to try to manipulate the manipulator. Laban is going to try and defraud Jacob. And he is going to be fruitless in his attempt to do it. And the reason that he's going to be fruitless is because God is for Jacob rather than Laban. And it is important for us, as we're going to see Laban for a couple more chapters, important for us to understand that whatever situations we find ourselves in as Christians, we are not in them alone. And we will run into Labans. We will run into men who will do everything that they possibly can to shaft us. And yet, they will not ultimately prevail because of God's being for us. They may appear to prevail for a time, but if they appear to prevail for a time, it's only because we haven't seen the rest of the story yet in our lives. And so here we see a beautiful picture of God overruling even a Laban, the Labans that come into our lives. And so Jacob says, I want to go away. I want to go back to my own home, to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you. I've served you for 14 years for them, and now I want to go. Let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you. I've fulfilled my commitment. And Laban said to him, please stay, if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. God is with you, and I don't want you to leave me, Laban says to Jacob. And then he says to Jacob, name me your wages, and I will give it. Ah, free agency here, right here in chapter 30 of the Bible. Name your wage to get you to stay. And Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and now it is increased to a great amount. And the Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I also provide for my own house? I've worked hard for you, but you have reaped all of the profits. I have a family. I have children. I need now to look out for their future and to establish my own household. And you haven't allowed me to do that. You've taken everything that I've earned. And so he said, Laban said, what shall I give to you? Doesn't want to lose him. And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. And in this he is like Abraham. When Abraham turned down the reward of the king of Sodom, so he said, I don't want even a latchet from your shoe, because I don't want you, once God does what he's going to do in my life and through my life, to say that you're the one that was responsible for the prosperity in my life. And so here he says, I don't want you to give me anything. And Jacob is typically like that. I mean, he's a self-made man. He doesn't want anything given to him. He says, if you will do this thing for me, I will again keep and feed your flock. Here's my wage. Let me pass through all of your flock today and remove from there all of the speckled and the spotted sheep and all of the brown ones among the lambs and the spotted and the speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages.
And so what he says here now is this huge flock that Laban has, and the dominant traits of these animals in that day were that the sheep would be completely white, and the goats would be completely black, and the cattle would be completely brown. And so the streaked or the spotted animal was the non-dominant gene, whatever that word would be for that. It wasn't the dominant gene pool. And so he comes along and he says, listen, I want you to go ahead and take your flock, Laban, all and take every spotted one, every streaked one, every one that is multiple in color, and remove it from your flock so that you leave just solid colored animals here. And then as those solid colored animals breed with one another, And they breed with the dominant traits of solid colors, whatever would be born to them that is spotted and streaked, that'll be my wage. And then he gives the reason for it in verse 33. So my righteousness will answer for me. And he's trusting in God. He's saying, take it out, we'll see what God does here. We'll stack the entire deck against me. And then we'll see what it is that God is going to do in time to come when the subject of my wages comes before you. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it's with me. And Laban jumps at this deal. Laban says, oh, that it were according to your word. Are you serious? I mean, he just can't believe. You have to be a Laban to understand the excitement of this man's life. I'm getting excited, aren't I? But anyway. And so Laban removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all of the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had some white in it, and all of the brown ones among the lambs, and he gave them into the hands of his son, and then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flock. He doesn't just separate all of the spotted and the streaked from Jacob just 1 day's journey, but 3 days' journey. He doesn't want any of them coming back and being accounted to Jacob's portion, and he doesn't want them breeding with the solid colors. So 3 days separate, not just one, 3 days. It's kind of interesting that when you are a person who can't be trusted, you usually don't trust anyone even though they're trustworthy. And that's why he doesn't trust. This man has never done anything wrong to him in 14 years. But he doesn't trust him. Why? He doesn't trust himself. And so Jacob took for himself. And this is Jacob at his Jacobiest. This is Jacob in all of his glory in terms of the flesh. This thing that he does. Now Jacob took for himself. You think, how is he going to do this? Rods of the green poplar and of the almond and chestnut trees, and he peeled white strips in these rods of these limbs, and he exposed the white in each of the rods. And the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink so that they should conceive when they came to drink. And so he is devising some means, and the word conceive there in verse 38 and then again in 39, it means to go into heat. He is doing this in an attempt to bring the animals into heat so that they will reproduce with greater frequency. It's very scientific, mind you. That's his desire. And so the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked and speckled and spotted. And so as they come into heat. And so here is Jacob manipulating, and he's putting in these limbs, and he's stripping them, and all the while he's thinking, man, I'm smart, and it's sending them into heat, and what's being produced out of these sexual unions are streaked and spotted animals, and he thinks it's all his manipulation and his conniving, and it's not. In just another chapter, he's going to look back on it and say, God had it.
wasn't, didn't have anything to do with that. How often, I really, how we come up with our devices. We come up with our little things, and this is the key to, you know, ministry, and this is the key to the third wave, and this is the key to this, and you just gotta, you know, strip down the branches and get them before the people, get the vision before the people here, and they'll start to multiply, and the Great Commission will go on, and all of the devices that we can do in our private life and in our spiritual lives. And all it does is it just slows everything down. Because now God has to come to me and reveal to me that it wasn't my inane manipulation, but it was His grace. It was His grace. And Jacob's going to learn that. But in the meantime, he's sweating up a storm, peeling these branches, and I get all this, you know, taken care of. And then Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the streaked and all the brown and the flock of Laban. So this, he's going to have them kind of, this is kind of lamb visualization. He's got them looking at the streaked and the spotted lambs over here and Laban's group. He's got his separated over here. And then amongst the, you know, the sheep were supposed to be white. And so where there were brown sheep, he had them looking at the brown sheep. You know, this suggestion, you know, how it affects that gene pool. And so, oh, I mean, anything he can possibly do here. But this is Jacob. This is Jacob. But he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flock, because he wanted to breed streaked with streaked. He's a smart man. And it came to pass, whenever the stronger livestock went into heat or conceived, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters that they might conceive among the rods. And so he only among his flock bred the strong with the strong. He didn't breed the weak. And when the flocks were feeble, he didn't put them in. And so the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. In other words, he'll take a 3-day journey from me. And he takes and he just lets just the random reproduction occur among Laban's flock, but in his flock he's being very selective. And in terms of frequency and in terms of stronger with stronger. And thus the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. Chapter 31. Well, this is going great for Jacob, but the sons of Laban are not excited about what is happening, because they are watching their father's flock dwindle down and Jacob's flock get bigger and bigger. And it's happening because of what God is doing, not because of what Jacob is doing here. And Jacob heard the words of Laban's son saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all of this wealth." An absolute lie. But the weak person will make that excuse. They had done everything that they could to manipulate and take advantage of Jacob. And now when God turns it around on them, they make Jacob look like the heavy, the wrong guy, like he's the one that's been doing what's wrong here. And it's not true at all. Not true at all. And so they look and they say, "He's taking our father's wealth. This is what he's doing. He's, you know, he's ripping us off." And they're jealous of God's blessing in this man's life. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable to him as before. There's a strained relationship here. And then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred," and then gives him those wonderful words of comfort, "And I will be with you." And it's very important before making that kind of a move to have that kind of a word from the Lord. It's very clear. The time is up. It's been 20 years now, Jacob. 6 years handling these flocks. It's time for you to get on with what it is that I have next for you in your life. And so it's time to move on. And it's interesting to me here because it's an interesting illustration of what happens in our lives today sometimes, even within the body of Christ. That sometimes God takes us and He puts us places for a time. He puts us with certain people.
in certain places, in certain situations, so that we might learn what we are supposed to learn in that time, and in that place, and in that situation, and with those people. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we are going to be there forever. God forever holds the freedom to move His people around whenever He wants to move His people around. And it's time for Jacob to move on. He's absolutely free to move on to the next place that God has for him. Now, the interesting thing to me is he has all that is necessary for him to do that, and that is God's Word. It's time to move on. But he's going to, in the following verses, get his wives together, and then he's going to kind of have a confab, and he's going to tear down the situation that he's leaving in order to justify leaving it. And there's no need for it. Because he's not leaving because the situation is bad. He's leaving because God has told him to leave. And how many times in the body of Christ I have seen people leave churches. And they leave the church, simply whatever church, and come here or leave here to go someplace else. For the simple reason that God has said, where you are, you've learned what I want you to learn there, and now I have created a dissatisfaction in your heart. I've heated things up around your life, not to just singly make you miserable, but so that you would be open to leaving. And now I give you direction. I want you to move from here, and I want you to move over to here. And God must always be free to do that in all of our lives in the body of Christ. Always free to do that. But when he does that, and if he does that, I don't need to tear down what I'm leaving. I just need to say, this is what the Lord has told me to do. And I know to do what the Lord has told me to do. There's a beautiful picture here. Beautiful picture. Guilt-free. We ought to be always guilt-free. Free and listening to God and obeying God. And so here he is in this whole situation. It's turned into a bit of a mess, and God is moving him out of it. And then the Lord said to Jacob, again, verse 3, return. And so Jacob sent, and he called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock. So he calls them off. He's going immediate obedience. And he said to them, I see that your father's countenance, that it is not favorable towards me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And that is a great encapsulation of this chapter, by the way, but God. We see it over and over and over again. Now, let me say one other thing before we proceed in this chapter. This chapter is a wonderful chapter in terms of instruction on interpersonal relationships. And it is wonderful instruction on how to deal with difficult people. Now, there's not a difficult person in this room. I understand you and I are not difficult people. But there's an awful lot of those difficult people out there, aren't there? So we need to know how to deal with them. But there are difficult people. There are Labans out there. And again, there are manipulators out there. You ever known a manipulator? Oh, yes, they're there. They're out there. And we've all got a little bit of that inside of us. All got a little bit of Laban inside of us, a little bit of Jacob inside of us. And so we get great, great instruction in this particular passage on how to deal with these kinds of situations. And so he takes and he says, but God, the God of my father, has been with me. And you know that with all my might, this man had a work ethic, I have served your father, yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. And if he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all of the flocks were speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all of the flocks were streaked. And so God, now he realizes it, wasn't his great and crafty, you know, study of, all of this, gene pool and all this kind of stuff. He says, so God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. He gives God all of the credit here.
And it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked and speckled and gray-spotted. And then the angel of the Lord spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here I am. And he said, Lift up your eyes now and see, all of the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked and speckled and gray-spotted, for I have seen all that Laban is doing for you. No, he's doing to you. I've seen it. You're my son. I see what's going on. And what God gives him a dream of what God is doing. And this is why the Bible teaches that we must be very careful not to just take what we see in the natural into account, but that which is unseen. And there's so much going on in the unseen realm. When God makes a promise, He will do whatever is necessary, and He's very frequently doesn't clear it through me. And I find out subsequently that he's been doing this. But He gives Jacob a flash in terms of what's happening. Here's Jacob with this whole flock of solid-colored animals. And then yet is Jacob is dreaming, how in the world am I going to get a speckled animal out of this flock? God begins to show him what God was doing even in the solid colored animals. You know, He made what they were about speckled. He made their gene pool where that was the dominant thing. And so He just took over the whole system. So it didn't matter what was there and what was happening and what was seen. God was going to be true to His word. And He was true to His word. And I am the God of Bethel. Now, you remember me 20, you know, years ago, Jacob, where you anointed the pillar and there, and where you made a vow to me, such as it was? Now arise and get out of this land and return to the land of your kindred. And then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, Is there any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? You're right, he's been a crumb. And are we not considered strangers by him, for he sold us and has completely consumed our money? And he did. And Jacob had worked hard in order to provide a dowry for them. And a dowry was simply alimony in advance, so that if your husband dumped you, you already had the money. You already had the house. You already had whatever. I mean, the women had very few rights in those days. And so, and here is the father who's supposed to be holding this, and he squanders it all. He squandered, and they took note of it. But they also understood what was happening there. For all of these riches, verse 16, which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. That is maybe the greatest advice in the whole Bible. And you know what, ladies? It is wonderful to hear it from a wife, even when it means pulling up roots and making the changes and all of these things. When a wife will stand by a man and say, well, whatever God has told you, you go ahead and do that. What that produces in a man, a millennium of nagging will never produce. And so it is wonderful, that kind of encouragement from a wife. And then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels. And he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and he's about 3 days' journey away from them, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. Let me say something about Rachel stealing her father's idols. It is very interesting that when we grow into adulthood, how sometimes as we look back upon our childhood, even difficult times in our childhood, even areas in which our parents were wrong in what they did and how they did things and what they worshiped and how they, you know, did the things that they did. Sometimes just by virtue of the fact that it is familiar to us. It has a warm place in our heart. And I'm certain that that is placed there by God with the desire that people would raise their children in the Lord, and then when they get older, they would look back warmly upon the security of that wisdom and that household, and then model their life after that. But not all of us have been raised in godly homes. And sometimes there can be things that the parents have done. There can be gods or priorities that were a part of our household. And these things want to become a part of our lives too. And there's a warmth of the familiarity of the idols. And we're tempted to partake of them. And we must be very careful to take and weigh them by the Word of God. And if they don't match the Word of God, they must go. And you break the cycle as it relates to moving on and into our children. It's important to do that. And so she takes the idols, and I think that she still has some kind of an attachment in some way to that. And she shouldn't have taken it. She should have left it. But there's power there. There's power there. And that's where God calls us to break away from those things completely. And so she steals them. In verse 20 again, and Jacob stole away. Unknown. He's sneaking. He's sneaking. He's a grown man and he's sneaking. Have you ever found yourself, when you're dealing with a Laban, a manipulator, that you just say to yourself, this is so humiliating sneaking around them, but I just don't want to deal with them. That's where he's at. He just comes down to this level. He steals away unknown to Laban the Syrian, and that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he's not only stealing away, sneaking, he's running away. And so he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river and headed towards the mountains of Gilead. And God isn't going to let him get away that way. There just comes a point where God says, I'm not going to let you just sneak away and send postcards from Canaan back to Laban. I'm not going to reinforce that in your life, Jacob. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to force you to deal with this situation and this man, as unpleasant as it is, in a mature way, in a proper way. And so he's trying to run away from his problem here instead of dealing directly with it. It's a tendency that we can all have. But if we are right and we are obeying God and His Word and His promises, then there's no need for us to sneak. I think that there's a great need in the body of Christ to be compassionate in our dealings with one another, but to be direct in our dealings with one another. Instead of sneaking around in different things, and sneaking around as it relates to difficult people sometimes. And we can all be difficult people. But God wants to confront Laban with what he's like. And he also wants to change this pattern that is in Jacob of just always running away, finding the easy way out and moving it in that kind of way. He wants him to learn to stand up to this manipulator, stand up to this Laban. Wanted to produce character in Jacob's life, so that Jacob wouldn't sneak around away from these problems as a means of solving them that doesn't solve anything at all. Manipulation is sin. It's sin. And when a person is a manipulator, it's sin. And manipulation is basically when someone comes into my life and tries to remove my freedom of choice. And they work in a way in terms of circumstances or in terms of words to back me into a corner where I feel guilty for making an honest, open choice. And so they move in, and they take and they do everything that they can to remove our freedom to say no to them. And then when we say no, to have that decision to be honored. You ever had these people phone you to sell you something at dinner time? Oh, they've made me mad at times. Have you ever had one yell at you and then hang up on you and you don't know where they come from? You don't know who they, by the time I've hung that phone up, I've got the yellow pages and I'm, what was the name of that business? I'm telling you, it got me so mad. How do you get my gun? That's why I don't have a gun. But we've had them. We've had them where they've just been as rude as can be. And they come in, hi, Mr. Kyle, can I just have a moment of your time? We're offering you the world tonight. And for, you know, a mere $40 per year and on. And I mean, they take some kind of class that doesn't, that allows them to talk for 5 minutes without breathing. They have some kind of a lung capacity that's quite amazing. I think it's part of the prerequisite for getting this job. And isn't that right, Mr. Kyle? And Mr. Kyle? And Mr. Kyle? And Mr. Kyle? Yeah, you don't know me. Call me. Nobody calls me Mr. Kyle. And so Mr. Kyle, Mr. Kyle at Rosemead Court, Mr. Kyle. And so and on and the whole thing. And then you finally catch them at a breath. And then you try to put a stop. And then it's just like a pinball. I mean, then they're off on the next thing. Well, we'll add this to this, Mr. Kyle. And we'll throw in a free TV and all. And what is, they're manipulating me. They're trying to manipulate me. They will not take no for an answer. And I talked to one of these guys the other night as I was canceling something. When I signed up for it, they told me that I could cancel with a simple phone call. I'm a wiser man than that. But I did it. And so they call, and I'm just trying, and he's turning and offering more, and we'll give you the state of California. I don't want the state of California. I want Arizona. That's where everybody's moving, or Idaho, you know, Montana. And the guy goes on, and I said, I am trying to be nice to you. And I'm trying to be very diplomatic with you, but you told me that I could make a choice, and if I didn't want it, I could simply tell you that I didn't want it, and you would honor that choice. He was very mad. Hung up on me. It's manipulation. Now, that's the extreme. The more subtle ones are the ones that are even more difficult. When they're not on the phone, they're in your family. Or they're a neighbor, they're a classmate, or a co-worker, something like that. And I think that Gail Irwin has the greatest response. By the way, if you deal with manipulation and you have never seen Gail Irwin's video on dealing with manipulators, it is the classic. It is the classic on that. And what he says to a person when they come to him to try and remove his freedom to say no, he says, to them, the moment he senses that it's happening to him, he says, I feel like I'm not being given the ability to make a free choice, and thus I must tell you no. And that's what he says, and he closes it down. But, he with this warning that a good manipulator will never let it stop there. He knows he's been checkmated, but he'll never stop there. Because then what he will move on to is try and get you to explain why you're telling him no. And as soon as you feel that you must give him an answer, you're dead. You're dead. Because he's got you manipulated again. And then you give him an answer, and then he checkmates that answer, and you give him another answer, and checkmates that answer, and they're typically brilliant people, great minds. They're three steps ahead of you and I in the whole thought process and everything. And by the time the whole scene has played itself out, you've said yes to them because you've forgotten what the question was to begin with, and you hate yourself for having done it. You go, they got me again. Oh, I just hate myself. I hate it when they do that. And God takes with Jacob, and he's going to make him face his manipulator so that he will then be able to, the rest of his life, deal with those who attempt to manipulate him. Don't be afraid to say no. Don't be afraid to say no. And don't resort as Christian people. There's no need to sneak. Address things. And our freedom of choice must be honored by people. And so this is what God is going to send Laban. He could have just let him sneak off, but he's going to send Laban because he wants to also teach Laban something. And Laban was told in the third day that Jacob had fled. And then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey and overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God came. Here's that but God. God protects us in these dealings. Be sure that when you're dealing with this kind of person, God is working both ends. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. You watch yourself, buddy." And what God is revealing here is that Laban had no intention of letting Jacob get away with what he was walking away with, those flocks, those herds, and his family. And God warns him, beautiful, God's protection of Jacob, his protection of us. And so Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you've stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword?" And here he comes in, and again, it's manipulation. It's a very manipulation that Jacob tried to run away to get away from. Here he is. As a phony as can be in here, you're opening a line and where you gone. I mean, this is the thing I was afraid of. Because what has Laban done? What every manipulator will do. The incredible capacity of turning everything around on you. Everything around on you. "Why did you flee away secretly and steal from me and not tell me?" Did he really steal from him? "For I might have sent you away with joy and songs with timbrel and harp." I hope you're feeling bad. It's just heaping. "And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. And now you've done foolishly in so doing, and it's in my power to do you harm." Not true. "But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.'" And so he had come to do him harm. And since he'd been foiled in that, now he gropes for a reason for chasing him out there. So he says to him, and now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house, but why did you steal my gods?" That is one of the most pathetic sentences in the whole Bible. "You went and ripped off my God." Well, what kind of a God can you rip off? Oh, you went and took the little guy. That's no God, that's a good luck charm. So this is what, and the guy doesn't even know what he's saying. It's absolutely pathetic. You went and stole my God. Ran away with him. And then put him on a milk cart. I was going to get him out here and find the guy, the little guy here. And put him. Aren't you glad that you have a God that can't be stolen? That we can never leave his presence. We're never like out of his radar, you know. Oh, you went behind a hill. My God's, you know, powerless of these hills. It's like kryptonite. So here he comes in and he doesn't see, and that's the folly of idolatry. He can't for the life of him see the foolishness of that, following a God that can be stolen. And Jacob had answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid. Because I was afraid, for I said, 'Perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force.' I was doing what I was doing out of the fear of man."
with whomever you find your gods, don't let him live. He doesn't know that Rachel's taken. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent first. You're a little scamp, you've got it. And then into Leah's tent, and then into the two maids' tent. But he did not find them. And then he went out of Leah's tent. And again, pathetic. Here's a man that's looking under blankets and all kinds of things. Where'd he go? Where'd I put? And then he went out of Leah's tent and he enters Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols and put them in the camel's saddle and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent but did not find them. And she said to her father, and you can tell that he is her father at this point, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of woman is with me." And he searched but did not find the household idols. And then Jacob was angry, and he rebuked Laban. Now Jacob is finally going to stand up to Laban. And he stands up to him in anger. And we know better than to deal with these situations in anger. That's the flesh. Doesn't work the righteousness of God. Why does Jacob stand up in anger at this particular point? Because he's waited 20 years to deal with a situation. 20 years to deal with it. It is so important for us to deal with situations before they are that ripe and before we are that angry. We don't want the sun to go down on our wrath. These things are to be dealt with immediately and swiftly while they're smaller. And so here's a situation where, and you, when you find yourself, and I find myself blowing up over some kind of, you know, and they got a 5 minutes later, and all that kind of thing. Ooh, we have waited way too long to address a situation. Way too long, and he has. So it's not commendable in the anger. That's not good. But he's finally addressing the situation. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all of my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. These 20 years I've been with you. I've been an excellent shepherd. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young. I've not eaten the rams of your flock, and it was the right of a shepherd to do so. And that which was torn by the beasts, I didn't bring to you. I bore the loss of it. And you required it from my hand, whether it was stolen by day or stolen by night. You made me bear all of the losses. And there I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. And thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. And unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac," who was the fear of Isaac? Jehovah, "had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." And so now Jacob finally sees that God has been protecting him as it related to this manipulator all along. God has been protecting him. And Laban answered and said to Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters. These children are my children, and this flock is my flock, and all that you see," not true, but he's got to save face. "But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore, come, let us make a covenant, you and I. And let it be a witness between you and me." And so Jacob took a stone and he set it up as a pillar. And then Jacob said to his brethren, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made a heap. and they ate there on the heap. There's a restaurant name for you. And Laban called it this in the Aramaic. And Jacob called it Galeed, far easier, in the Hebrew. And they called this pile of stones the heap of witness, or the heap of testimony. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me this day. Therefore the name was called Galeed, also Mizpah, which means watch. Now, maybe you have, and I don't want to bum you out as it relates to your jewelry collection, but if you've ever had what's called a Mizpah ring given to you, or a Mizpah necklace, it's one of those necklaces where it's you got like a round circle and it's broken in half, and then one partner gets the one piece and the other partner gets the other piece. So that when, you know, the boyfriend and the girlfriend get together or whatever, and then the two pieces are put together, then they're one. And so it's called a Mizpah ring. And it's very wonderful in terms of that concept, but its biblical basis is a little more hostile than that. A little more suspicious. And they call it Mizpah, they call it watch, because Laban is saying, I don't trust you, buddy. And so I ask that God would watch you. And Jacob says, I don't trust you, and so I'm going to ask God to watch you. Now, hopefully our Mizpah rings aren't with that kind of a tone. That'd make for, kind of more hostile than we like our marriage relationships and engagement relationships to be. And so, because he said, may the Lord watch you, since I can't, between you and me, when we are absent from one another. And if you afflict my daughters, he has a high opinion of Jacob, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. And then Laban said to Jacob, here is this heap, and here is this pillar, which I have placed between you and me. And now they're going to make a clean break from one another. There's nothing wrong when God works things in our lives that produce a clean break from certain people. Now make sure that he produces that break, but there's nothing to feel guilty about when a break is occurring, and of necessity. And that's the case here. And so they're creating a break. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap and this pillar to me for harm. And the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father judge between us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. And then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat. And they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning Laban arose and kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. And then Laban departed and returned to his place. And so the split occurs. And we'll pick it up in chapter 32 next week.